the home of explanations. You've got More Than Money. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. Semi-live this Saturday morning, February the 27th. Lots going on. We're deep into tax season. We're about halfway through tax season, as a matter of fact. As of Monday, I think we've got 6 weeks left. I'm sorry, what? So welcome indeed. If you're a loyal listener to More Than Money, you know exactly how this works. Momentarily, I will give you both a phone number and an email that you can reach out to us. And if you are so inclined and you would like to share More Than Money with folks who are further afield than perhaps direct line of sight, our satellite radio transmission, you can, anyone that you care about can listen to More Than Money live streaming through our website, morethanmoneyonline.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. There's a Listen Live button in the upper right-hand corner. There's a Ask Gene button in the lower left-hand corner. And they can fully participate in the entire show live coast to coast, as we have folks listening from literally coast to coast, California to Florida, Florida to the New England states and beyond. As most of you are aware, however, despite the fact that we are now, literally, thanks to iHeartMedia, a national radio show, we are based right here in the Lehigh Valley, in the Holy Lands, between Bethlehem and Nazareth. I guess, you know, the scriptural reference is obvious. It could have been far worse. Could have been between Sodom and Gomorrah. It could have been really... Hey, we got this great business building that you should look at. It's right between Sodom and Gomorrah. Ouch. Nope, we got lucky between Bethlehem and Nazareth right off 191. And in the More Than Money World Headquarters, happy to serve you. Happy to see folks come through the door. Speaking of happy to... Speaking of happy to see folks come through the door, if you were with us last week in the 9 o'clock hour, you heard one of my most favorite interviews ever, Shane Burkaw, his cousin Sarah Burkaw, both of the nonprofit Laughing at My Nightmare. Shane, humorist, author, blogger, rock on tour. young man's got skills, young lady's got skills. These are two wonderfully exciting, dynamic, lots going on in their lives, young folks. And Shane's mom came through the door Monday night, Tuesday night, Monday night, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not really sure. It's a blur. I'm telling you, this week is a blur. And wonderful to get to meet her. I only got to speak to her for a moment, but she got to hear most of the interview, and I think the only person that might have embarrassed her was me. So I think Shane and Sarah did fantastically. If you were not able to join us last week for the interview with Shane and Sarah, please go on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com. Check that out. You would do me a great favor if you would check it out after today's show. I mean, come on. You can't be listening to that and to Gene. Well, actually, if you were listening to that, you would be listening to Gene. Wow, this is too confusing. But the interview is up, posted on the website, and please check it out. Great fun, great inspiration, great message. These are great young people, and gives me great hope for our future. I'm looking anywhere for great hope for our future. Apparently, this week, so were a lot of trumpeters. Is that? Trumpkins? I don't know. Folks who are supporting Trump seem to be gathering some steam. We'll see how that all goes. If you listen to the media, Hillary Clinton will be the next president because, hey, if you've got a private server and there are only 1,800 classified emails that you let slip into the hands of the Chinese and the Russians, I don't see that as a big deal. I don't think that demonstrates any serious errors in judgment or 100,000 of them. Youch. If you would like to join us this morning, if you are joining us for the very first time, there's a couple of things you should know. It's easy to do. We talk to you about your investments, your income taxes, your estate planning, and the business of your life. We are fiduciaries. We are radio fiduciaries. We are here to serve your best interests. Admittedly, the radio format has some limitations because your best interests are always served by a detailed and thorough exploration of where are you and where are you going? Where are you and where are you going? You know what? I'm going to circle back to that here in a moment because I think it's that important. But if you would like to reach us with a question about investments, income taxes, estate planning, business of your life, retirement, wills and trusts, insurances, tax deductions, Roth IRAs, Roth 401ks, starting a business, running a business, selling a business, easy to do. 610-720-7900. 610-720-7900. And for all those of you who are concerned about me this morning, yes, I am getting my emails. Because as of last night, I wasn't. And I fixed it.
Nice.
Nice indeed. Yeah, Mr. Technology. I got it. Got it. So, speaking of getting emails, if you'd like to join us through email, easy to do. Gene@askmtm.com. Gene@askmtm.com. Lots of folks go, hey, MTM, what does that stand for? more than money. I just kind of thought it was obvious. Actually, it wasn't obvious for many years because, as John will recall, for the longest time, I would say MTM, as in Mary Tyler Moore, just because I was desperately in love with Mary Tyler Moore. It's not my fault. Oh, sure. Just all you got to do, watch the old Dick Van Dyke shows and just, like, don't melt into the carpet because she was that gorgeous. Goodness gracious. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com. A couple topics that you might wish to discuss today, but you're going to have to ask. Apple's CEO is standing firm, is saying he's not going to assist the FBI in cracking into the iPhone of a known terrorist. Interesting thought process there, both on his part, on Apple's part, maybe on the FBI's part. And is there reason for them to be concerned and or suspicious of the federal government? Duh. Jeez, always. The markets this week had an interesting ride. Gold is up significantly for the year. Oil was up significantly for the week. Stocks up nicely. Let's see what else. We got a half a dozen questions this week about a company that is soliciting the purchase of annuities. And from what I've researched, I've been able to do, even though the company's name is the Annuity Action Network, which I think is just some sort of marketing BS. They're offering to buy annuities, lawsuit settlements, and structured settlements. And lots of folks are saying, what's the deal there? Well, it's very simple. It's they're vultures. If you have an annuity that's paying you, I'm picking a number, $300 a month, and you would rather have cash, your annuity is worth, again, I'm picking a number out of thin air, $30,000, they will offer you $15,000. Why would you take that? Because some folks are uninformed. Some folks don't understand. Some folks are desperate. Some folks are easily taken advantage of. There's lots of reasons, most of them really dreadful. But these scavenger funds, sadly, perfectly legal, will come in. And if you, you had a lawsuit and part of the settlement was you're getting payments over time, they will come in and give you a discounted version, and let's just say that the imputed interest on your settlement was 5%. They give you half what it's worth. They're now making 10% return on their money. Yowza. Excellent for them. not so much for you. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com. Lots going on in the world. Later in today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about fixed indexed annuities, try to correct some misconceptions on the part of folks out there that have been listening to our show for a period of time. We're going to try to figure that out for you. But again, that'll be a bit later in the show. In the meantime, of course, email questions galore, and happy to answer as many as I possibly can for you. 610-720-7900, gene@askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. One of the more controversial questions that we got this week, I actually spoke about this a bit on the TV show. Wow, the reaction I got. Young man writes, my dad passed away 6 years ago, my mom about a year ago. I have one brother who lives in Florida and one sister who lived with my mom. Mom's will left her estate to the three of us equally. She named my sister as the executor in that will. I know that mom owned her house outright, had bank accounts and at least one IRA. I would guess from the last time I had a conversation with her that her estate was worth at least $300,000. Okay. My brother and I each got checks of less than $10,000. We've spoken to my sister. She won't answer any questions. How can this be correct? The answer is it may very well be legal. Corrects a very different question. But it could very well be legal, and here's how it could be legal. Certain things happen when settling an estate before we even look at the will. If you've been listening to More Than Money for a while, you've heard me discuss a couple different things around the settlement of an estate that may have surprised you during the initial discussions. For example, certain legal documents assist Americans in avoiding probate. Probate, by the way, is the legal terminology for the process of proving that the will that's been filed at the courthouse is the legal and appropriate one, and thereafter addressing all the requirements of that will, whether it be paying taxes or making accountings, final income tax returns, or disbursements. That's the probate process. So on its face, this young man's question, hey, mom had 300 grand, there's three of us, it's equal, we should each get 100 grand. I got it. I absolutely got it. On its face, that's as simple as can be. Except that if I'm reading between the lines correctly, what happened in your mother's estate was that she set up certain assets to not go through the will. In this case, it looked like 90% of her assets or more did not go through the will. Now, what kind of things don't go through the will? You mentioned an IRA. If she had a beneficiary named, we can strongly suspect it was your sister, since it wasn't you or your brother. We can strongly suspect it was your sister. If she had a beneficiary name, that happens first. Never reaches the will. So pick a number. Say that the IRA was $80,000. $80,000 goes directly to your sister, does not go to the estate. The estate's now $220,000. Let's say the house was $120,000. And again, as an example of never reaching the will, if your mother placed your sister's name on the deed to the house, either outright gave it to her or added your sister's name as a joint tenant with rights of survivorship, your sister would automatically receive the house. It would never reach the will. It's not split into three equal pieces. So now we've gone from 300 down to 100. What if the bank accounts totaled $70,000 and your mother added a TOD, a transfer on death designation, naming your sister as the recipient of those accounts at her passing? Again, that happens before assets reach the will. Beneficiaries of any kind, life insurance is another good example. An annuity is another good example. If there are named beneficiaries, they do not pass through probate. They never reach the will. So it is very possible that at one point your mother had complete control over $300,000 and that her passing, by the time of her passing, she had complete control over $30,000. Which was split three ways, you and your brother each getting about 10, your sister getting about 10, on top of what apparently would be about $270,000 that she had already received. Is this legal? Yeah. Yeah, unless you can prove undue influence, unless you can prove coercion, unless you can prove that someone, your sister or someone else, was strong-arming your mom to make these changes, it's legal. Is it the right thing to do? How do I know? How in the world would I know? On the surface, from the tone of the email, it sounds dreadful. It sounds, oh my gosh, like how can a sister do that? I don't know that. You say she lived with your mom. Did she live with your mom for a year, for 6 months? Or did she live and care for your mom for 10 years? What sacrifices did she make? I don't know. Maybe she made zero sacrifices. There are sisters out there. You know what I'm talking about. In every family, if there's more than one kid, never mind the if there's more than one kid. No matter how many kids, if there's kids, there's at least one. You're shaking your head all the time. So is it possible that what has happened here is legal? Yeah. Is it possible that what happened here was actually the right thing to do? Sure. If you are uncertain, you can certainly petition for an accounting. And if your sister as the executor used an attorney, that'll be a little easier. Your attorney can contact their attorney. That's pretty straightforward. I think your attorney could also, I'm out on a limb here a little bit, I think can go to the courthouse and get an accounting. So at the very least, you can see kind of exactly what is or is not listed. I feel bad. I really do. Conflicts with families are very, very difficult. And rightfully or wrongfully, there seems like there's going to be a fracture here between you and your sister. If she has earned it, let her live with it. If she hasn't, then you've got to learn to live with your mom's decisions. And respect them. If your mom made them of her own free will, then God bless her. It was hers. She can do what she wants. Just my opinion. But I would be right. 610-720-7900. Gene@askmtm.com. MoreThanMoneyOnline.com. I am confident, relatively confident, that our emails are still working. So if you have an email, please send that over and we'll see what we can do and see if we can help you out. Here's one that we received yesterday. Young lady writes, we own two multifamily houses that when sold are estimated to yield about $400,000 to be used for retirement. At what age is it best to sell? Do we wait until after we retire when we are in a lower income tax bracket? And what tax shelters do we have to minimize taxes on this capital gain? pretty straightforward. Lots of folks in the Lehigh Valley invest in real estate. Lots of folks in the Lehigh Valley have struggled. It can be a real challenge. Sounds like these folks have done well. And I'm going to interpret this young lady's phrase, estimated to yield $400,000, meaning to net $400,000. $400,000 after the mortgages have been paid, if there are any, after fees have been paid, yada, yada, yada. So let's just pick a number and say that the actual sales price is $500,000. We're going to net $400,000. And we're trying to do a couple things. We're trying to decide when to sell. And number two, we're trying to figure out if there's any ways to reduce capital gains. Well, first objective is to identify what, if any, tax liability you might have. People assume because they're selling and they're going to have cash in their hands that they turned a profit. It's very possible they did not. Is it possible that they paid $500,000 or $600,000 or $700,000 and they're going to sell these properties and net $400,000? Sure. Now you've got a loss and you've got a tax deduction, which you would likely need to use now while your income tax bracket is relatively higher. Is that likely, however? Probably not. Not if you're netting $400,000. Not likely. And so folks say, well, what did they pay? Well, that's a good starting point. Let's say they paid $300,000. You say they're going to yield. No, we're selling them for $500,000, so we have a $200,000 capital gain. Yeah, that's not likely. If they've held these properties for any length of period, any period of time at all, it is far more likely that during that period of time they have depreciated the property rather significantly. It may even be depreciated to zero. Well, Gene, what difference does that make? Well, if you paid $300 and you're selling for $500, but you've depreciated the property down to quote unquote zero, you're probably down to a cost basis of maybe $50,000, not $300,000. Now you have $450,000 of capital gains, not $200,000. And at maximum tax rates, that extra $250,000 might cost you $55,000 more dollars in tax. So is it possible this is a seriously large tax? The answer is sure. Sure. Couple things that you need to do. Number one, have a professional tax advisor work with you on this. If you've been owning properties for some time, it is highly likely you've been working with a CPA, an enrolled agent, a professional tax advisor, and make sure that you're speaking to them long before you sell the property. And here's why. You're absolutely correct. You may be in a lower tax bracket when you retire. You may not. Wow. A lot of folks assume they'll be in a lower tax bracket when they retire, and then they find out because pensions and income and Social Security and investments, goodness, they're in the same tax bracket or higher than they were when they were working. So number one, make sure you are accurate in your assessment of tax bracket. Number two, understand what that means. If you're in the 15% tax bracket or lower, your capital gains rate is zero. So we may be spending a lot of time and effort trying to figure out how to avoid something that doesn't need to be avoided. It may actually end up being a zero cost, liability. The other end, of course, it could be huge. Ouch! Are there ways to avoid it? There are ways to soften it. Avoid, no. Evade, no. That's prison. Avoid, no. Soften, yes. You could exchange this property for another piece of real estate that is a pure income-producing property. So you could take this $400,000 yield, exchange it for a property worth $400,000, in essence paying cash, and then in retirement spend the cash flow if you are so inclined to still be a real estate business person. Or if you're not, you could sell the property in essence, over time, it's called an installment sale, receive pieces of this $400,000, pieces of it year by year by year over any number of years that you would select, 5, 10, 15, 20, so that rather than getting a $400,000 capital gain in 2016, you might get a $40,000 capital gain and get one of those over the each year for the next 10 years. So, biggest, most important piece of advice, sit with a professional tax advisor. Make sure you understand exactly what your specific circumstances are and how in the world that applies to you. And then make sure that you explore all the options to see what, if any, of those options bring advantage to your situation. We're coming up to the half-hour break, which means that you're going to get some Fox Network news, some good information. Couple minutes opportunity to head down the hallway or grab a cup of coffee or grab a pad and pen. When we come back, we're going to talk about cyber hack into the IRS, and we're going to talk about fixed income annuities. We're going to talk about the word fiduciary, because I got a very interesting question about a fiduciary this week. We're going to answer your questions, though, of course, first. 610-720-7900. Gene@askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. All this and more after this on More Than Money. I don't know how you keep on giving. Welcome back to the home of explanations. You've got More Than Money Radio. You've got Gene Dickinson, your host, your personal financial advisor. 780 years of experience at your service. Happy to share that with you this morning. If you have a question, please join us at 610-720-7900 or an email, gene@askmtm.com or morethanmoneyonline.com. I'm thinking I fixed my email. Let me just check this to see. Looks like I did. It's fantastic. Very good. Here we go. I will look at that and see what we can do. Before we get too far along, because it is tax season, we go to the phones. We talk to CPA extraordinaire, financial advisor in his own right, and a gentleman who's working anywhere from 18 to 26 hours a day these days. Good morning, Mr. Darrell Okin.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
Reasonably well. We're doing well here this morning.
You do sound reasonably well.
Well, that's half the battle right there. You got to sound it.
Goodness. I mean, at this stage of the game, you could be down to shoe leather, but you sound like you're doing pretty well.
For sure.
What wisdom can you share with us this morning?
Well, I think there's some confusion and some interesting things out there about the new form this year that everybody's asking about, and it's the 1095 form relative to the Obamacare and proof of insurance.
Okay.
And a lot of folks are asking, and they're getting some different information, say, from their employers and whatnot, on whether you actually need to have that form in order to file your taxes. And from a technical perspective, no, you don't necessarily need it, but it kind of puts your tax preparer in a precarious spot the IRS and your client, because it's our job and our obligation to make sure that each client has health insurance, and without that form, it's sometimes difficult for us to tell whether you do. And since the IRS makes that requirement of us to make sure that the client has health insurance, we would like to see it. So to get some conflicting information, possibly, and from our perspective, getting into this now and seeing some of these forms come in, some people have them, some people don't, some people say they're on the way. We really, really would like to have that in our hands to verify the insurance. Otherwise, we could run into problems down the road with the IRS saying, you didn't have insurance for the whole entire year, so you do owe us some money. And we also need the 1095C, if that's what you have, in order to make sure that if you were getting a subsidy from Obamacare, to make sure that subsidy is calculated properly.
And Daryl, for everybody listening out there that's hearing this and going, I think Daryl's misspeaking. Isn't he talking about 1099s? Because I know we get 1099s. And the answer is no. This is a whole new world, and it's a whole new reporting system, and the IRS absolutely is looking to every professional tax preparer in America to be their enforcement arm. So while your employer is saying, don't worry about it, you don't really need it to file your taxes, technically, I guess that's correct. Mm-hmm. In reality, if the IRS turns to a professional tax preparer and says, you filed 300 returns, you said everybody was good, show me.
Right.
The professional tax preparer either has to be able to show them or lose their ability to be a professional tax preparer.
Right, and there may be some monetary fines and penalties that may show up on that, too. So, like I said, it puts us in a really bad spot between the IRS and our client. Many times we know you got insurance, but we kind of got to have the documentation. And can we technically file a return? Sure. It's just like if you don't put your W-2 into the tax return, can you file it? Sure you can. But I think the IRS might have a love note for you down the road through 2 or 3 months.
So. Yeah, and boy, that's the letter you just don't want to get.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of letters you just don't want to get, this is the season for tax scams, for IRS tax scams. Phone calls to particularly senior citizens. Hey, you made a big mistake. Hey, you owe money. Hey, you better pay it right away. What do you say to folks who are getting those kind of phone calls?
IRS is never going to call up a taxpayer to say you have a tax liability outstanding. It is always 100% of the time done via mail. And those scams are still out there. We still get the calls. What do I do with this? What am I supposed to do? Here's what you do. Ignore the phone calls. If you get a letter, bring it to me. But if you get a call, hang up on them.
And if you get an email, don't respond in any way, shape, or form. Got it. Daryl, I got an interesting article sent to me yesterday. Apparently last year, there was a cyber attack on the IRS. Originally, it was announced that they thought approximately 100,000 people, their accounts had been compromised, which when you're talking about compromising an IRS account, you've got everything you need to know to steal somebody's identity, home address, social security, kids' names and social securities and bank account numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And you got it all. Back in May of last year, they announced 100,000. In August, they said, sorry, it was probably more like 335. And as of Friday, they have said, now it looks like 700,000 people have
That's correct.
So it is absolutely a concern. There are, according to what I am seeing from this PR release, IRS plans to mail notifications to those folks whose accounts have shown signs of being hacked and offer them a free identity theft protection for a year. Now, if I'm a criminal, what I would do is steal 700,000. I would wait a year, and then I dive back in because that's about all that they're offering. Sadly, for all those out there who are kind of hoping that the IRS is operating at a much higher level of protection, apparently not.
No, and I already got a client who was compromised, and It just makes everything more difficult from a tax filing perspective. But the real issue is the information that somebody has out there, and it's just got to feel like you've been violated.
Absolutely. You know what? While I have you on the line, can I run something by you?
Sure.
A gentleman wrote me this week. He has an extensive collection of guns he's going to be selling at auction. That auction goes off, I believe he said, in May. He expects to bring in about $100,000. He's hopeful for more, of course, and wants to know whether this is a capital gains item on his taxes. I want to I want a CPA to confirm that I didn't lie to him when I said that collectibles, sadly, do not qualify for capital gains treatment.
No, he's going to be on the hook for regular income. That's going to be regular taxable income, because collectibles in two ways. I mean, collectibles are hard to identify as the value of them.
Sure.
And that's the problem. So whatever you get for them, that's going to be ordinary income.
And he can, I'm hopeful, he can offset that $100,000 of proceeds with whatever he initially paid for those guns.
Yeah, and I think any of the costs involved in selling them, you mentioned that he's taking them to auction.
Yes.
I'm sure there's an auction cost there and some other thing, travel possibly, and whatever other costs, you could probably offset against that. But since they are collectibles, just like they're not really deductible if you give them away,
right?
You're going to have ordinary income on those. I believe you're correct.
I wish I had a better answer. Mr. Ogin, make sure that you stay well today and keep plugging along, and we'll see you at the office at some point shortly, I'm sure.
You got it, sir. Thank you.
Thanks, Darrell.
Yep. Bye-bye. 610-720-7900. Gene@askmtm.com. Oh my gosh. Gene@askmtm.com, morethanmoneyonline.com. I have an email from John saying, my wife and I are in our later 50s, have most of our money tucked away in IRAs and 401ks. Naturally, good for you. We only have a small amount of liquid assets in our savings account. We want to get that up to a much larger amount. What's the best way to save and get at least some return? Hooray for negative interest rates. Not. And keep it liquid for an emergency. There was a time when safety, saving money, having it for an emergency fund, meant that you earned nothing. Nothing. Go back to, if not your mom, my mom, your grandmother, my grandmother. They saved their money. And when people talked about the cookie jar, they weren't whistling Dixie. They were absolutely being serious. A few dollars at the end of the week went into the cookie jar. It paid nothing, but it was absolutely readily accessible. That's as liquid as it gets. I can reach in and take it anytime I need it. And it paid nothing. And then there was a time when 1 or 2% for the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, that was forever. For the longest time, mortgages were 4%. Interest rates on savings was 2% for decades. And then starting in the 70s and certainly into the 80s and 90s, everything became fluid. And there was a time when you could get a 4 or a 5% return on a money market with virtual no risk whatsoever. Those times are past. Now, I absolutely get why you're doing this. Your wife and I are very wise to get this emergency fund squared away. Absolutely wise to do that.
More than money.
Don't be as concerned with the rate of return as you are about the dollar amount. So you've got your target dollar amount in mind. Fantastic. Absolutely be careful that you don't get lured away by these too good to be true offers of you can have money, money, money. If you want to stretch that a little bit, if you have, say, four pieces of the target amount that you're involved in, and you put $10,000 in a savings account, basically earning nothing, you might look at some ultra short-term bond funds. We've had some good success in the last couple of years with those, paying anywhere from 0.3%, 0.4% to as much as 1%. There are also some online non-bricks and mortar, some online banking opportunities you might explore. And lastly, you might look at a credit union. Some of the credit unions are doing very, very nicely. You're not going to get a large number, and that's not terribly important. Keep your money safe and get as reasonable a number as you possibly can. 610-720-7900. We go to the phones. We talk to Ray. Ray, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, sir. How may we serve you?
Well, I was curious about my wife. She took $15,000 out of her.
Hey, Ray. Ray. Turn down your radio, please. We're getting feedback on that.
Okay.
And then ask your question. Happy to help.
Okay. Good talking to you again, Gene. I spoke to you once before, and I'll tell you what, some of the words of wisdom that come out of your mouth are really good.
You're very kind. Thank you, sir.
But anyway, the bottom line here, my wife took $15,000 out of a pension that she got years ago from her old employer that she got. Now, I'm pretty sure they may have taken the taxes out back then, but she got it, okay?
Okay.
Now, we have to pay income tax on that $15,000?
When did she take it out?
She took it out in June.
So has she already received a 1099 from the pension fund?
You know what? I think she got a letter from the bank. I didn't get a letter way back when. You know what? I don't remember, Jane.
Okay. If this is a withdrawal from a retirement account, she should have received, and I think technically it's 1099-R, but it's a 1099 saying, hey, we sent you this amount of money. That should have come out shortly after the first of the year, but lots of 1099s are delayed. Make sure that she or you contact whomever issued that check, whether it's a bank or a mutual fund group, investment group, wherever that check came from, to confirm that there is a 1099. And that 1099 will tell you specifically whether taxes were withheld or not. If they were not, you are absolutely required to pay tax. How old is your wife, may I ask?
She'll be 62.
So she is beyond 59 and a half, so we don't have to worry about any penalties. But if it came out of a retirement plan, it is 100% taxable to the federal government. It will not be taxable to the state of Pennsylvania, but you do need to seek out that 1099 so you know exactly how they treated it.
Beautiful. I appreciate it, Gene. That's why I'm glad I called.
Ray, you're very kind. You take care.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, sir. 610-720-7900. Gene at AskMTM.com. Let's go to the phones. We talk to Dick. Dick, good morning, sir.
Good morning to you. I greatly appreciate what you put on the air there.
Oh, you're very kind.
I have a question with regard to deductions for charitable organizations. I know the rule generally is document, document, document.
Sure.
But there are some situations where there are no documents issued. For instance, if you make a, you drop used eyeglasses into the lion's bucket that you see around.
Sure.
Or if you make clothing deposits in one of these kiosks that you see around, you get no return on it. Now, I'm told that a deduction can be made without the document up to a certain level. I wanted to ask you, is that basically true? And how does one find out what is deductible under those circumstances?
Very good question. In general, anything that's under $250 can still be deducted as long as you provide the, you don't actually have to provide, you have to just simply record the contribution you made or the gift that you made, the date that it was made, the organization you made it to, and some estimate of value. So you're absolutely right. You go in into one of those places kind enough to collect the eyeglasses for the Lions. You drop in four or five pairs of older eyeglasses. You make a note of that. You know it's going to the Lions Club, the date that you made it. And we'll talk in a second about how to figure out what those contributions are worth. You could, same kind of an idea, you're traveling, you're going to church on Sunday in a church that you don't normally attend, and you drop a $20 bill in the collection plate, you make a note of that. It's absolutely tax deductible as a charitable contribution. Again, you're making note of the date, the amount, and the organization. Now, if you're giving cash, that's really, really easy. If you're giving clothing or eyeglasses or donations of books. We just recently dropped off for a number of books up at the Nazareth Library. They're having their spring sale here, I think, next month to raise funds for the library. You need to provide some guesstimate of the appropriate value. There are websites So if you go on the internet and Google gift values or used eyeglass values or used book values, you will get some very, very good guidance. There are also a couple of companies that publish guidelines. So particularly with used clothing, that can make your head hurt. Is a man's shirt worth $5? Is a woman's jacket worth $25? For the average person, it's a mystery, but there are companies out there that are selling guidance in this respect. For the average person, Dick, like you and me, if we are using good common sense, and giving reasonable estimates of value, it is unlikely the IRS will challenge. And if they do, you're going to be on solid footing. So make sure you keep a log, the date you made the contribution, the organization you made it to, what the item was, and your fair estimate of value, either by your good common sense or by documentation going online and doing some research, and you should be just fine.
Well, okay, thank you very much. Just for clarification, You don't have to submit the log with your income tax form, but you keep it in your records in case a question comes up.
Dick, that is exactly correct.
Okay, thank you very much, Gene. Have a great day.
You too, my friend. 610-720-7900. Dick makes a very important clarification at the end of that call. A lot of folks are saying, oh my gosh, I can't file my tax return. I've got to go get all those receipts and I got to stack those receipts. Hang on a second. You don't send those off with your tax return. You don't send off your mileage logs, for example, if you're claiming mileage for business deductions. You don't send off your logs that you're keeping for deductions for charitable purposes. You need those in your file in the just-in-case scenario that says, I got one of those letters from the IRS. They didn't call, so I know it's probably legit. And they're questioning my deductions. Having that documentation is the absolute lifesaver. In most cases, if we have done this exactly correct, you will find that a few moments at a copy machine, and you send that off to the IRS, and your problems have been solved. 610-720-7900, Gene at AskMTM.com. I'm going to do a really, really quick one. Actually, no, I'm not. What I'm going to do is this. John's speaking to one of our More Than Money Family listeners as we speak. So if you have either a question that you'd like to hold on through the top of the hour break, that's 610-720-7900. Or, and of course, be patient with John because he's only one person. Or if you want to do it a bit easier, you can certainly send me an email, gene@askmtm.com. And of course, you can go online, morethanmoneyonline.com. I'm thinking, yeah, got it. Very good. So if you are staying with us through the top of the hour, the word fiduciary being thrown around a lot these days, some things that you're going to want to know about that. Fixed indexed annuities, some things you're going to want to know about them as well. And we have a gentleman whose mother passed away and left him a substantial block of stocks, $180,000. And he wants to use those to help fund his daughter's college education and wants to know about how to handle that from a tax standpoint and how to make sure that he's stretching those dollars as best he can. So we've got all of that there in indeed. If you are leaving us now, keep in mind two things. Number one, you can listen to the next hour anytime after Monday around noon as we post More Than Money on our podcast, on our website, morethanmoneyonline.com. And if there's anything that we've talked about or anything else that's concerning you in your financial life that you would like more information about, a second opinion, we offer those at absolutely no charge, absolutely no pressure, absolutely no obligation. Absolutely no free dinners either. So there, absolutely. All you need to do is request. So if you'd like to meet with one of our More Than Money advisors. I get to meet everybody, so that's fantastic. I'm like the maitre d'. I get to say hi and transition you to find folks that will serve you. All you need to do is ask Gene at AskMTM.com, MoreThanMoneyOnline.com, or you can call 610-746-7007. Voice of an Angel, Natalie Merchant, saying we got to go to the top of the hour news. Fox giving you all the information you need for a great weekend. See if Hillary's going to have a great weekend down in South Carolina. Ahead of Super Tuesday, we'll be back after this on More Than Money.